Hi, you're listening to a Pod for Good Media Network podcast. We are a network that provides podcasting production services and a supportive community in which podcasters can thrive. If you're a podcaster local in the Tulsa area, we would love to have your show on the network. If you are interested in starting one, we would love to help you get started. Find us online at podforgoodmedia.com and fill out our Pod With Us form. Happy podcasting.
Welcome back to another episode of In Depth with Dion. In this episode, I speak with Tyrence Billingsley, a descendant of Greenwood and founder of Black Tech Street, to learn how he's leading the effort to transform Black Wall Street into a premier tech hub. But first, the rundown. In local news, Justice for Greenwood has announced Project Greenwood, a reparations package he's pushing the city to pursue that includes direct payments to survivors, a victims' compensation fund, business contract preferences for descendants, a scholarship program, a Trauma One hospital serving North Tulsa, and returning land to descendants. In state news, Oklahoma Republican Governor Kevin Stitt unveiled a proposal to cut and eventually eliminate the state income tax. What was left out of his State of the State address, however, was any mention of the contributions from Black-owned businesses and Black communities. And in national news, amid his ongoing effort to bully other countries to submit to his will, President Donald Trump has falsely accused South Africa of committing discrimination against white farmers. Now, notably, 30 years after the end of apartheid, white South Africans still own 72% of the land despite being a minority. And those are some of the headlines. I'm your host, Dion Osborne. This is In Depth with Dion. At this point, by now, a lot of people have heard of Black Wall Street. But there's a movement, a tech movement going on in this city, and Black Tech Street is at the center of it. Today, joining me on In Depth with Dion is Tyrence Billingsley, the man behind Black Tech Street. Tyrence, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. You're a legend in our community yourself, so it's an honor.
Look, you said that, not me. Please don't put that on
well,
me.
Well, take it.
I really appreciate that coming Absolutely. From you. Talk about what is Black Tech Street? And what are you trying to do for Tulsa?
Absolutely. So Black Tech Street kind of started with a kind of a question. So, you know, what could Black Wall Street have been had it been supported and not destroyed? And when I thought about the level of tenacity that it took for these entrepreneurs to build these incredible businesses during Jim Crow, that smashing through walls and out-of-the-box thinking reminded me a lot of the tech industry. And that essentially led us to this three-pronged epiphany. You know, one, tech is one of the only industries in which you can build intergenerational wealth in 7 to 10 years due to the high via successful company exit, you know, due to the high multiple of, you know, tech startups. Two, tech is the core medium through which all global innovation is taking place consistently. And three, back then, the number's much higher now, but back then, by the year 2030, they were projected to be as many as 4.3 million high-paying vacant tech jobs due to a tech talent shortage. So when we put all three of those things together, you not only saw this incredible wealth-building opportunity for African Americans, we saw the Black Wall Street vision pushed to a new horizon. So that led me to surmise, had Black Wall Street been supported and not destroyed, and had it persisted kind of uninterrupted, it would be nothing other than the nation's premier Black tech ecosystem or Black innovation economy. So that's where the name Black Tech Street comes from, and that's our mission to rebirth historic Black Wall Street as a premier Black innovation economy, but also catalyze this movement that sees African Americans embrace the tech industry as a mechanism for wealth building and global impact. So in the day-to-day, what that looks like is we architect and secure Black tech-focused economic and industry development opportunities for Greenwood, specifically in three key focus areas. And we identified these focus areas based off of their wealth building potential and their critical nature to the global economy. Mm-hmm. So these are three verticals that have ubiquitous penetration with every other tech vertical. So that's cybersecurity, business intelligence / data analytics, and a core, real anchor, honestly, in responsible artificial intelligence. So we've developed kind of a strategy to put Greenwood at the forefront of these industries and bolster, you know, entrepreneurship, workforce, and academia in these areas. So in order to do that, you've kind of got to move at scale, especially we were bootstrapped org. We don't have more money than God, like a lot of orgs that get started up did. So it's like, how do you create this kind of change? You've got to partner with the entities that can move at scale. Mm. So we'll partner with different, whether they be companies or entities that can move at scale and get them to anchor a presence in Tulsa. The first big entity that we targeted and successfully got after 2 years was Microsoft. So Microsoft, we had initially pitched them on, you know, helping upskill some African Americans in cyber. But really, we pitched them the whole vision of, you know, what could this movement do if it had a giant behind it like Microsoft? So after 2 years, on July 31st, that was 2022. Is that 2022? Yes, that was 2022. Microsoft announced their holistic partnership with us with an initial headline goal of getting 1,000 black people upskilled in cyber or by the year 2030. And that could be via like upskilling, attraction, or upskilling attraction and really just general education. But that kind of developed into a much broader partnership that kind of led us to our what we're doing recently with Tech Hubs, if you want to get into that.
Let's do it.
All right, so the Economic Development Administration had a program that was initiated after one of the bills was passed, the CHIPS and Science Act, that was essentially built to bolster local American innovation. So there was a big pot of money of about, if I remember correctly, it was about $500 million that was going to be allocated to about 10 to 12 cities, 10 to 12 hubs that could show they could be globally competitive in a specific area over the next 10 years. So Tulsa put together a coalition called Theta, called the Tulsa Hub of Equitable and Trustworthy Autonomy, Theta. And it's built around autonomous systems. That's so think drones, self-driving cars, think robotics, things like that. And this coalition was led by Tulsa Innovation Labs. Black Tech Street was on the core steering committee. Microsoft, as part of our partnership, and it can't be a big announcement yet because we got an announcement coming, but as part of our core partnership, they partnered with us, and their portion was to anchor helping us build a Greenwood AI Center of Excellence, one half of which would feature a one-of-a-kind AI and cyber co-innovation lab anchored in historic Greenwood. So Theta got the initial Tech Hubs designation, which was essentially just a title that said federal government was going to designate us as a tech hub and essentially put us on an elevated level. But then there was a round two to actually get the funding. We got the funding as well, and we were one of the two hubs that got $51 million, the highest amount that any hub got allocated. So, and of that $51 million, $10.6 million is coming to Black Tech Street to establish the Greenwood AI Center of Excellence. So it's $10.6 million over the next 5 years, half of which will go towards a Microsoft lab, half of which will go towards a program we've developed called Aspire, the AI and Autonomous Systems Program for Innovation, Research, and Education. This is essentially going to be a program that's built to upskill and kind of baptize the entire community in artificial intelligence via a mechanism that we developed called Blue Teaming that shows them how they can, in real time, leverage large language models and other AI technology to improve their lives or in their profession.
Yeah.
So that's the one half. And there's another half that's actually going to focus on community-based AI research and development projects. So we've gotten access to some compute power via some partnerships that we've developed that I'll get into. And this compute is actually going to be able to be leveraged to work in tandem with community to see how we can apply AI to any sort of issue that the community has. So whether that be an issue on how do we do more effective community development, potentially how do we think about reparations, you name it. AI is going to transform every aspect of human life. And what we want this program to do is we want Greenwood to be at the forefront of how the entire world looks at how do you apply artificial intelligence and make it the basic building block of the new world that's coming. That's kind of what BTS is wanting to do. We don't just want to rebirth Black Wall Street. We want to keep it globally competitive and at the forefront of the 21st century. So we want the entire world looking at us to say, you are, that's how you architect this new world. And we want to follow suit after you.
I guess I keep getting stuck in my head on the dollar amount. I mean, to take an idea to these level, to this level of business when it comes to, you know, companies like Microsoft, like the top, you know, the top companies in tech. And then for them to trust the vision and not only trust, but actually to invest and disperse funds. First of all, I mean, let's just back up. Like, what does it feel like to know that this isn't just an idea? This is turned into a reality. And, right, you know, generations, future generations of Black Tulsans will be able to enjoy the fruits of this labor.
I mean, it's among the highest of honors. Like I said, whether it be O.W. Gurley or J.B. Stratford, these are people I've admired for a long time. And the things that they did had entire communities, our entire community, enjoying the fruits of that labor. And, you know, I don't shy away from thinking like that. Mm-hmm. It is an incredible honor to build something like that. It's also a heavy responsibility, you know. Nobody's perfect. So it's been an incredible prompt for me to grow and evolve in the ways that I need to grow and evolve, and to ensure that this is great for our community, and also for it to evolve beyond me. You know, when you're a startup and you're a founder and nobody believes in you, you've got to carry everything. Well, not nobody, I had a whole community, but there were plenty of people who didn't. You got to carry that torch on your own a lot of times, and, you know, and a lot of times you hold it really close, but once it grows and it becomes something beyond you, something that's going to feed and help spark the imaginations of others, it has to grow beyond you. So, I mean, it is bigger than you. It always was. You were just the person who it flowed through to be birthed into the world. So it's a massive honor, but it's a massive responsibility. And it's also a humbling kind of experience to now be decoupling myself from it, not in terms of like abandoning it in any capacity, but allowing it to grow beyond what I initially had thought.
I remember the day of the press conference, mm-hmm, on Microsoft, and the speech you gave, and, you know, the Greenwood Cultural Center was just, it was the most packed I'd ever seen it, at least since I'd moved here. And I also remember in Las Vegas when you took some Black Tulsans and different organizations to join you to test these large language models, mm-hmm, during DEF CON. You know, what is it about this goal, 1,000 Black Tulsans upscaled in cyber and tech by 2030, why is that goal important for Tulsa?
I think it's important because initially you really need to put a tangible number on, like, you got to have some sort of goal for people to work towards. And I think having that number of people who've been touched or who have touched this technology in a significant way and who are fluent in it, I think that's the first step to getting a real critical mass. Because, mm-hmm, you got to think about it. This is AI, cyber. This stuff isn't some new little niche tech. This is like the new electricity. So eventually everybody's got to know how to apply it in some capacity. Yeah. So getting critical mass is very important. So that number is something that we try to run towards. And beyond even the number, whether it be the lab or whatever else we're building, there's got to be a massive cultural acceptance of this technology. And it's got to be done in a way that gets everybody to see it as a no-brainer versus something that they have to be evangelized into. Best way to do that is to have really clear, really breathtaking examples of what it can do, and have a critical mass of people who can show how capable they now are as a result of being involved with this technology.
You know, I think about generation after generation, and a lot of times Black Americans have been left behind in these different, the revolutions, I guess, when it comes to, you know, different industries, industrial revolutions. And we're in the midst of this tech revolution, mm-hmm, right? And so the goal is to make sure that our people doesn't get left behind. Not just that we don't get left behind, though, like you said, that we're leading this charge. We're leading as an example of how to do this ethically and responsibly. Talk about your journey, because I know it wasn't all roses when it comes to pitching your idea. Before Tulsa was catapulted into the limelight in 2021, following the 100 year anniversary of the massacre. Talk about what it was like trying to get people to buy into Black Tech Street.
So yeah, that was a really interesting journey. So actually, it all started when I authored an article, it was called Building a Black Silicon Valley for Black Wall Street's Future. Went out in the Black Wall Street Times. It was January of 2020, actually. Mm-hmm. Massive reception, almost like both grassroots and grass tops. People had a lot of, everybody loved the idea. There was no pushback. It was almost like a universal acceptance. Now, when I took up the mantle of trying to be the one that kind of helped make this happen, there was lots of acceptance from the community, of course, but you know, other parties weren't necessarily so convinced. Some, whether it be due to a lack of track record they saw in me or through a massive opportunity that they saw to be the ones to birth it, which is, I mean, hey, this is everybody, again, ideas. I've always said ideas are sacred and I've always been very guarded of them, but I recently got introduced to a perspective that said, you know, ideas, they flow through you, but you know, the truth is ideas are trying to be birthed into the world into the best form that they could possibly take. And sometimes they look like multiple people running towards different ideas. So, I mean, that's a different conversation. But yeah, there was a lot of pushback. It's like, you know, you're a 24-year-old kid. You don't really have a proven track record. You know, like, how are you going to make any of this happen? You know, so you had to put them on and prove them wrong. You know, it's like, so I talked to everybody in the city that I could. Built out the vision, showed them that the spirit of Black Wall Street that built this, a lot of people probably said the same thing about those guys, you know, and those women, everybody. So, I mean, I've always been somebody that thrives off a challenge. This is actually something that I've wanted to evolve out of and have worked to evolve out of, because you should be able to do whatever you need and summon whatever you need of your own accord. But with me, moment somebody tells me I can't do something, even if I wasn't capable of it before, I became capable of it in that moment. Mm. So that, honestly, that resistance and pushback honestly helped serve as the catalyst for what made me evolve and work towards this thing as diligently as I actually needed to. I often look back on it and say, well, what if everything had gone the way I wanted? Would the outcome have been as great as it was, or might I have gotten comfortable in a way that may have led me to slip up? I don't know. But I tend to try to have a narrative in my mind that the way things worked out were the way that they needed to. Whether that's true or whether that's just a coping mechanism, who knows? We'll never know. But I mean, if it serves a purpose, you know, let it ride. So yeah, it was difficult in the beginning, especially not having the financial backing.
Right.
And so literally just starting with a story, part of BTS, part of what I feel like is so great about it now, was something that evolved in the beginning because it was all I had. We're great at storytelling now, because in the beginning, that was all I had. That was all I could do. I had no money to make anything happen. I didn't always have the buy-in that I needed from the people who could move things. So I had to learn how to tell powerful, cold stories that could get people to believe that even if they didn't see it right now, that it was very, very tangible. And I think that was for the better that we exercised that muscle, because at the end of the day, it's that incredible storytelling that's gonna mass mobilize people. So yeah, it was a very crazy journey. We'll have to tell you the real story of drinks, but yeah, it was really interesting.
I mean, a story is the most powerful thing.
In the world, you know, everything is stories.
You can save the world, you can ruin the world with the story.
Absolutely.
How do you navigate, you're a descendant of Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate, not just as a Black person, but as a descendant of Greenwood, knowing you have this idea, and people who aren't from your community, they have the power to make it happen or to shut it down. How do you navigate and communicate and stand up for yourself in a way that brings people together and doesn't alienate people? Because I feel like mm-hmm. one thing that, you know, I've talked with other people about, and for myself, you know, I don't know how to not say what's in my mind exactly the way it's in my mind. You know, so how do you kind of massage communication?
It took some prayer and therapy, and then it took some work. But no, it took some work. It took some work. It also took some humility. Some decentering the ego, which was difficult for me, especially because your ego always flares up when you feel you've been either disregarded or wronged or doubted, you know? So if you had an ego beforehand, once that happens, it grows to protect you even more. So that was something that I had to work through. But especially when it comes to this power dynamic, there was just so much of that bothered me. Like how Greenwood was built on this self-reliance and self-sufficiency. I'm not saying they didn't have any help, but I mean, for a lot of the case, that was it. For the ability to make this happen, to not actually be in the hands of you, for it to be in the hands of other people and who aren't of the community, and they have their own agenda in terms of how they want to make it happen. You know, sometimes that's difficult to sit with. That was very difficult to sit with. I'm not going to say sometimes. It was extremely difficult to sit with. But the reality is we got to think about what is the ultimate end goal. The ultimate end goal is, you know, Black people flourishing. There were the people who originally built Greenwood were not from this community initially because it didn't exist yet.
True.
So, I mean, when it comes to this, we had to really think about what do we really want? Like, you have to work backwards from the end game. And that made it easier versus trying to move forward from where I was right in that moment. Because in that moment, all I could see was either how I felt things weren't going the way I had wanted them to go, how I felt they weren't going the way they needed them to go, who was being stepped over, who was being left out. That was all I could see. But once I tried to slip into the future and see what the end game was, it became easier to work backwards and then say, okay, we can move this way, that way to get to this end. Because at the end of the day, I mean, there are a lot of people who are not from this community who came here who helped inspire me and who, seeing the way they moved, ended up helping me understand how I needed to move. So, I mean, there's always been a conversation in Black Tulsa about, oh, you from here, you not from here. There's merit to understanding that in terms of context, but ultimately, no, we want come one, come all, come respectfully, and come in terms of unity, and we can figure something out. But it took work. That's a conversation our community is still having with itself. But when it comes to power, that's quite a lot.
So it's like chess versus checkers.
Chess versus checkers. And this is specifically true in terms of tech. So I recently went, I'm in D.C. a lot, but I recently went to D.C. for an EDA and National Science Foundation roadmap summit where they were talking about emerging technologies on a global scale. And they were talking about China's game plan. They were talking about how China views tech and advancements in tech as synonymous with power itself, which I believe is absolutely true. I mean, think about it. Whether it be the history of colonization or whatever else in this world, the people who end up running the show are the people who have the superior tech.
That's a good point.
always the case, whether it be from colonization or whether it be the United States being the first to develop the atomic bomb. Like, tech isn't just some, oh, cool gadget. Like, people who get the most advanced tech get to make the rules. That's always how life has been. Going back to whether it be the ancient Egyptians or our ancient China, it's the most advanced tech, weaponry or whatever else. That's always the conversation. So when it comes to power in our community and this tech conversation, I honestly see it not just as a way to keep us from being left behind. I see it as when it comes to being able to be in a position of you know, power in the new world, it all depends on how closely we associate with and are able to really have mastery over technology. So embedding and weaving that into our culture as a people is very critical. That was what I set out to do. And when the dynamics were not in my favor, when people who were not Black seemed to have all that power, I kind of saw it as a microcosm of what we were trying to do with tech in general, and just had to figure out how to navigate that.
That's powerful. And, you know, you've helped me kind of embed at least large language models into my daily routine, so much so that I can't remember the last day I haven't opened my ChatGPT.
Yeah.
I can remember a year ago, I did not want to look at that thing. Like, I know how to do things my way. I'm not, you know, I don't want some AI thing knowing me and knowing what I'm doing and what I'm asking, what I'm thinking. But it really is fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so helpful, though. It's so helpful, you know, when it comes to even this podcast and you know, trying to plan and schedule and brainstorm, things like that. It's so crucial already.
Very.
You know, when it comes to speaking of technical advances, you know, I wanna just pick your brain about this. By the time this episode comes out, we might have some more answers, right? But at least right now, at the turn of the new year, there is a hell of a lot of drones over the East Coast.
That's what you want to call them.
Well, you know, that's what the media is calling them.
Right.
You know, unidentified aerial
phenomenon,
whatever. What's your theory?
All right, y'all. Well, there are several, and I'll walk you through from most reasonable to wild.
Okay, let's do it.
So, most reasonable, and this is part of what our tech hub is actually doing, you know, autonomous systems, drone warfare, that's the future. So what I initially thought was could have been happening when we saw these drones hovering over the East Coast, hovering over critical infrastructure, and the United States government not really responding in a way that made it seem like they were dangerous. I was like, okay, this is probably the equivalent. So in like cybersecurity, you've got like white hat and black hat hackers. Mm-hmm. A white hat hacker is somebody who's trying to find penetrations or issues with your system so you can enhance them. I thought, you know, maybe these are U.S. drones. Maybe this is us essentially testing what it would be like should drone warfare, like swarms of drone warfare, end up coming to the United States. What kind of psychological effect would it have on the people? How easy could they have access to United States infrastructure? How could they use our own rules of not engaging these systems over civilian airspace through to via fear of something causing causing domestic harm? How well could they manipulate that and able to ensure that we can't respond the way we need to? So I essentially was like, this is us. And we're testing essentially what it's going to be like in the new world. That's one theory. Other theory was that, which would be crazy, and I hope it ain't true, is that it's China and some of the other countries who are testing these drones over our airspace. But that wouldn't make sense, because I felt like if they were foreign to the United States, we would have responded. Mm-hmm. But then again, if you don't know what they are and you don't want panic, maybe you're quiet about it. I don't know. Then there's the fun stuff, you know, which is that these are aliens or that they are, you know, these are UFOs flying over actual non-human intelligence that's somehow in our airspace. Nobody knows. Some of these objects have been seen performing maneuvers that don't seem possible. And there's been a long conversation in the United States Congress and in other areas about, you know, these UAPs, formerly known as UFOs, and what they're capable of and their technology. And a lot of these reports have said that, you know, it's the defense contractors, the Lockheed Martins, the Boeings, the Northrop Grummans, that these Skunk Works divisions that are familiar with these craft, that they've actually had them and have been reverse engineering them and building out new kinds of technology with them. These are all theories, and a lot of times people will be like, oh, well, this is just wild, but you've got to keep up with the hearings. This isn't stuff that people in tinfoil hats are putting on the internet anymore. These are reports that have come out from defectors who are saying that this is true, and the recent rash of this stuff is not the first. Hmm. You've got stuff going back decades of people coming forward and saying aliens are real. We've been reverse engineering their tech. So there are theories that maybe even the tech that's being seen, the drones that are being seen over the East Coast, maybe it's reverse engineered technology, and that is being used towards some end that we don't know. You know, again, I'm just laying the theory out for you. You can take or leave what you want, but there's lots of things that I think we need to be thinking about more seriously. For a long time, you couldn't even mention the word UFO or UAP because you couldn't even objectively analyze the topic, because even entertaining it was crazy. Yeah. We're not in that era anymore. Everything the past couple years have seen, lots of things people thought would be impossible or improbable happen. So we've got to open our minds. Humanity's on the cusp of something crazy. I don't know if the aliens are going to be landing on the front line. I don't know if there's going to be some types of deception events, of people trying to make people think they're aliens, but they're actually just human-made technology and they've got their own agenda. Nobody knows, but all I can say is these aren't the crazy conversations anymore. These are very real conversations to have now.
It's all out there. I mean, these are congressional hearings we're talking about. And at this point, I think the best thing that we can do is to guard against our own worst fears and to just lock in to community. Because the way I'm looking at it is the government knows something, right? They're going to let us know when they decide to let us know.
Exactly.
So what I'm not going to do is spend time worrying about it until that time comes. But like you said, I do think it's time for us to start having these conversations, because I do wonder how many of us would be accepting of it if it does turn out that they've been here for a while, we've been reverse engineering their tech, and this is not a theory, this is reality.
It's a paradigm shift. It's important for the psychosocial resilience of people to be able to get comfortable with this idea. Because some people, even if it turns out they're not threatening us in any capacity, the idea of extraterrestrials, I mean, that breaks the paradigm of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it should, to be honest with you. I mean, at the end of the day,
I don't either.
Whether they're aliens or whether they're not, I mean, even if you want to, and I don't think this is true, but who knows? There are some people who be like, oh, what if they had a hand in our creation? Like, how does that affect religion? Like, at the end of the day, there's people you got to love. There's problems you got to solve. If you believe in some sort of higher power, it's beyond what we interact with on a physical basis. So, I mean, I think it's important for the resilience of people's psyches to get comfortable with the idea and to not let it break them. Because when people get vulnerable, that's when people with agendas
can manipulate
you and come in with their own ideas and tell you how to live your life. So just think about, you know, watch some alien movies, play some alien games, just get comfortable with the idea that what if they were here? It's not going to break everything. Okay, we still got our priorities are still our priorities.
Right.
No, let's just be ready for anything. We weren't ready for COVID. I mean, I remember seeing people saying that, oh, the whole world is going to get shut down. I'm like, that's crazy. That would never happen. Next week, everything will shut down. So we've got to, like, you know, we've been living in that era of, a lot of people said the same thing about Trump's presidency when he first came on the scene in 2016. Okay, everything is, world is kind of topsy-turvy right now, and we've got to be able to adapt. Let's not have our frameworks broken because it's different than anything we've ever seen before.
Truth is sometimes stranger than fiction, and we have to be okay with that.
I think a lot of times it is stranger than fiction. A lot of time fiction, one of the theories is, a lot of time fiction is created in ways that desensitizes people or that makes people think that, oh, even that's too far out. Mm-hmm. Truth is even stranger. If the truth is stranger than fiction, but you've conditioned people to believe that fiction is too far out, their minds will never jump to what could actually be true.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, you know, yeah, I think the truth is almost always stranger than fiction, you know? So we've got to get used to that.
Well, to keep us grounded in the work that you are doing for the community and that will have lasting intergenerational impacts, how can people get locked in with Black Textry? How can they learn more about Black Textry and support the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. So you can go to our website, www.blacktextry.com. You can follow us on, we're about to get a much better social media presence. We're about to scale our team also. Right now it's been two or three of us. By March, there'll be 5 to 6 of us and then even more beyond that. So our team is growing. You can keep up with, really LinkedIn is really the best place. Find BTS, Black Textured on LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn to keep up with our work. In terms of getting plugged in, we'll be having some community conversations here in February to actually talk about, you know, what's happening with Tech Hubs, what our plan is long-term, how we want to leverage this, not only these funds, but the newfound position that we have ourselves in. You'll see us assuming much more of a, even more front-facing leadership role because, again, we don't see tech as just, like, isolated to tech. Tech is going to be the medium of everything, specifically AI. We want to be able to, through tangible programming and key performance indicators, but also through, like, our narrative and guidance, we want to be able to help people understand how they can maximize themselves in this new world they find themselves in. So, yeah, we'll be heavily involved. We'll be on the lookout. But also, you can reach out to me at tyrants@blacktechstreet.com. Alan will reply to you because my email gets inundated. But yeah,
sure.
So Alan@blacktechstreet.com. I'll tell him that I dropped his email after the podcast is over. But yeah, that's how you can get in touch with us.
Tyrance Billingsley, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. It's an honor.
For this week's Community Spotlight, I spoke with Norman City Councilman Steven Tyler Holman. With the vision of building an inclusive community, the longtime council member is a candidate, the only candidate in the race for Norman mayor, with a proven track record of standing up for marginalized communities. Check out what he had to say.
Well, a lot of what the city can do and what I've tried to advocate for as a council member who, like you mentioned, I grew up on the east side of town and went to elementary and middle school on the east side of town. When it comes to city services and city facilities and programs that we offer, it's important that those be available to people across the city. And we shouldn't expect that a single parent with, you know, that lives on the east side of town is going to be able to drive their kid all the way to the northwest side of Norman to go participate in a performing arts program or an athletic facility, a rec center, and then be able to pick them up too. I think we have to look at the distribution of our facilities and the programs that are in those facilities and prioritize making sure that if, you know, we don't have everything concentrated in one area where it makes it more difficult, especially for people who may not have reliable transportation, that may not be able to use the public transit. Maybe it doesn't run to that location, or maybe it doesn't run that late, whatever the issue may be.
Thank you, Stephen, for your impactful words. This week on Mic Up, I went to TikTok to learn what Oklahomans have to say about the state's efforts to comply with Trump's authoritarian immigration crackdown. Check it out.
We have some big news. The Oklahoma Board of Education has voted 6-0 requiring parents to provide the citizenship status of their children when enrolling them into public school. Now, for this proposal to go into effect, it still needs the approval from the governor and the state legislature. But given the partisan makeup of Oklahoma, that approval is very likely to be given. The National Immigration Law Center did release a statement saying, all children have a constitutional right to equal access to education regardless of their citizenship or immigration status. If the state legislature and the governor approve this, Oklahoma would become the very first state requiring the immigration or citizenship status of children enrolling into public schools. Comment below your thoughts and like and follow for more.
So if you're not aware of the Oklahoma news right now, Ryan Walters pushed for there to be proof of citizenship for the parents and the child in order to be enrolled into an Oklahoma school, which is really diabolical considering that Oklahoma is 49th in the country. Like their school status is so low because it's just not showing enough love. Nobody really cares about the main issue, and the main issue is making sure that these kids get the education that they need. Rather so, they want to sit here and be like, do you have a green card? Were you born here? I can literally tell you as a child that went to schools in different states that when we moved to Oklahoma back in 2010, 2011, it felt like we were held back. Not because they put us in a different grade, but because they were so behind on what I was already learning. In the seventh grade in Wyoming, I was already doing freshman, sophomore work. Considering when I got to Oklahoma, being put in the seventh grade here, I was doing fourth and fifth grade work. Make that make sense. Maybe you should worry about how we can move Oklahoma's school education system into a higher ranking versus trying to check a child's status. That is so diabolical. It's ridiculous to me.
That's all for now. Watch on YouTube, the Black Wall Street Times at bwstimes.com, or listen anywhere you get your podcasts. In Depth with Deion is presented by the Black Wall Street Times. Special thanks to our producer, Jesse Ulrich, and to every listener and viewer around Oklahoma and across the country.